Hello, this is your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer reader, Joanne Lowney, with the Wall Street Journal Business News for Wednesday, July 23rd, 2025. And here are your business headlines today. World Economic Forum probe of Klaus Schwab finds unauthorized spending inappropriate behavior. AT&T adds wireless and home internet subscribers. Accelerates fiber build-out. Can a steel boom revive this rural American county? Trump expects $20 million more in aid dollars from 60 Minutes settlement. Hershey lifts candy prices, citing high cocoa costs. GM profit shrinks after $1.1 billion tariff hit. Health aid, Kombucha, sells for $500 million. Blank check company strikes cryptocurrency deal. Railroad operator Union Pacific exploring deal for Norfolk Southern. Aquarian nears deal for U.S. insurer Brighthouse. PE-backed McGraw-Hill, NIQ Global Intelligence unveil IPO terms. Our first article today is World Economic Forum probe of Klaus Schwab finds unauthorized spending inappropriate behavior. Davos founder rejects preliminary findings of misconduct, including improper travel expenses and gifts, by Jenny Strasberg and Salini Ramachandran. An international probe at the World Economic Forum found that its founder, Klaus Schwab, engaged in a pattern of workplace misconduct over the past decade, including unauthorized spending by him and his wife, bullying behavior, and inappropriate treatment of female staffers. The probe, which the forum's board launched this April in response to a whistleblower complaint, found evidence that Schwab made comments to a female employee that were suggestive and potentially inappropriate. "Do you feel that I am thinking of you?" Schwab wrote in one late-night June 2020 email to a senior female executive. The preliminary findings were described by people familiar with the matter and documents reviewed by the Wall Street Journal. Through a spokesman, Schwab broadly rejected the findings, defending his 55-year tenure as the forum's public face and most senior executive. He said that he always treated women respectfully and that he and his wife never sought to gain financially from their roles at the organization that consumed much of their lives. The conflict threatens to deepen the schism between Schwab and trustees seeking to chart a path forward for the forum without the man who built it into a global enterprise best known for the annual Davos Confab of CEOs and billionaires in the Swiss Alps. A forum spokesman declined to comment. Schwab, who is 87 years old, stepped down over Easter weekend and no longer has a role with the forum. He has pushed back aggressively against the allegations threatening his legacy that saw him share the stage for decades with the world's most powerful business and political leaders. Investigators told forum trustees that their interviews found Schwab treated the organization like his fiefdom, routinely condoning harassment and discrimination and consorting to intimidation and fear to get what he wanted. There was little oversight by the forum of trustees of the questionable travel and other expenses, they said. Schwab and his wife, Hilda Schwab, filed more than $1.1 million in travel expenses that investigators have flagged as questionable. Much of that paid for first-class flights for Hilda Schwab to accompany her husband on forum-related trips where she had no formal role, according to the preliminary findings. Separately, the investigators have cited around $63,000 for trips by the Schwabs to Venice, Miami, the Skylies, and other destinations, with little or no evidence of business being involved. The most recent trip cited, to Morocco, spanned a week in late December 2024 to early January 2025. They said Schwab received gifts, including Russian tea sets, personalized Tiffany cufflinks and fur coats in violation of policies. Investigators cited 14 hotel massages billed to the forum, either on his corporate credit card or through junior employees' cards, adding that Schwab later paid for about half of them. Schwab said he always told assistants to bill him for the massages. The preliminary findings were described in confidential documents that were recently presented to some forum trustees, according to people familiar with the investigation. Investigators also discussed the findings with Schwab in a recent meeting that spanned more than 5 hours. The Swiss law firm conducting the probe, Homburger, is expected to consider Schwab's feedback before finalizing the results and making recommendations to forum trustees by the end of August. Homburger declined to comment. The full forum board of trustees will pass the final report to Swiss authorities that oversee nonprofits and will discuss whether to refer the report to prosecutors, people familiar with their plans say. Throughout this journey, Hilda and I never used the forum for personal enrichment, Schwab said in a written statement. In additional comments through the spokesman, he cited his long fixed 1 million Swiss franc, equivalent to $1.3 million, annual salary. Schwab said he also received a fixed allowance of 100,000 Swiss francs a year to cover dinners and other costs of entertaining guests related to his job, primarily at his residence. He said through the spokesman that he entrusted assistants to separate private travel costs from work-related expenses, and that he intends to reimburse the forum for any personal expenses that he and his wife should have paid, pending results of the investigation. But Schwab said that any travel costs that the forum paid on behalf of his wife to accompany him on work trips were justified because of a good faith understanding rather than a written policy between the forum and the separate Schwab foundation she chaired. She hasn't earned a salary since 1973, he added. Through the spokesman, Schwab said he donated most gifts he received to charity and displayed others, including Russian tea sets, at forum headquarters. He said he didn't specifically recall other gifts described by the investigators. The whistleblower complaint from this spring was filed almost a year after a Wall Street Journal investigation described a toxic culture for women and black employees at the organization. Investigators found additional evidence along those lines. They found that Schwab sidelined pregnant women or women over the age of 40 at times in ways that affected their careers, mental health, or both. Schwab, through the spokesman, said he always treated women respectfully. About the 2020 late night email to a female staffer cited by investigators, Schwab said such communications didn't reflect his character and added that he treated the forum like a family and saw himself as a father figure to many young employees. Lawyers interviewed more than 50 people as of earlier this month, including current and former employees, and were still conducting interviews and reviewing documents. The investigation follows a spectacular blow-up at the top of the forum, which kicked off after the trustees told Schwab they had intended to investigate a fresh wave of whistleblower allegations against him and his wife. Schwab argued that he had already been subjected to a months-long probe and threatened to pursue investigations not only of the trustees, but also of the whistleblowers, leveling accusations against him. That earlier forum investigation led by former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, senior counsel at U.S. law firm Covington & Burling, spurred a high-level reorganization of reporting lines earlier this year and departures of senior executives. But Klaus Schwab emerged largely unscathed. The forum at the time said allegations against him weren't substantiated. Much of the drama in recent months has played out publicly in ways particularly problematic for a body that has preached governance and social responsibility with Schwab as its chief orator. Investigators have found Schwab's inappropriate behavior extended to personal intervention in the results of the forum's high-profile Global Competitive Report, which ranks countries on factors ranging from financial stability to corruption. One recent year, Schwab said he approved of the methodology but wanted changes because he was worried about India's poor score and the UK's climb up the ranks post-Brexit, investigators found. He leaned on employees to bump up India, they found, citing his hard-won relationship with its prime minister, and to demote the UK so that Brexit supporters wouldn't be able to cheer the country's move up the rankings. Through the spokesman, Schwab said he only intervened in forum research when necessary to protect the integrity of high-profile reports. Some of the findings were earlier reported by Swiss outlet Sonntag Zeitung. Investigators also cited lavish spending on the interior of a luxury property called Villa Mundi, a costly project near Lake Geneva in Switzerland that they say the Schwabs in late 2019 steered to a design firm they had hired for personal work. Hilda Schwab then largely controlled use of the forum-owned property, reserving much of it for a private use, investigators have found. The Schwabs deny directing the refurbishment project or use of the building. The couples used a forum-funded driver on some vacations and expensed their residential phone line and a mobile phone used by their maid in Geneva. Various expenses covered by the forum as benefits for the couple weren't reported on income statements, investigators found. Schwab said, through the spokesman, that he used the driver who doubled as security when justified to manage security risks. He said the home phone line and maid's mobile were valid forum expenses because of the volume of work and forum-related entertaining the Schwabs did at home. In his statement, Schwab said he hopes the organization continues to thrive, adding, "Even if I am no longer part of it, I deeply hope the forum will remain a trusted bridge builder in a divided world." Write to Jenny Strasberg at jenny.strasberg@wsj.com, Shalini Ramadanchandran at Shalini, that's Shalini dot Ramadanchandran at wsj.com. AT&T adds wireless and home internet subscribers, accelerates fiber build-out. Company raises its free cash flow forecast and says it will invest new tax savings into network infrastructure. By Patience Hagen. AT&T gained wireless and internet subscribers in the second quarter and announced plans to invest further in its fiber cable build-out with some of the billions of dollars it expects in tax savings under the recent tax and spending bill. The company added 401,000 net postpaid wireless phone connections in the second quarter, a slowdown from the year-ago period when the company added 419,000. Still, the figure handily beats expectations. Analysts polled by FactSet expected 302,600 net additions. AT&T also added 150,000 net broadband connections, nearly three times the gains it reported in the prior year period. The increase was driven largely by fixed wireless service. Revenue rose 3.4% year over year to $30.8 billion, above analysts' estimate of $30.5 billion. Net income attributable to common stock rose $4.5 billion from $3.5 billion in the prior year period. Shares fell more than 3% in pre-market trading Wednesday. AT&T has aggressively expanded its home internet footprint by building more fiber infrastructure and by upgrading the network that powers its fixed wireless product. The company has been urging customers to package its phone and home internet products together and has said for the past several quarters it expected the home internet expansion to drive growth in phone connections. AT&T's gains stand in contrast to that competitor, Verizon Communications, announced Monday. Verizon lost a net 9,000 postpaid phone connections in the second quarter. AT&T said it expects to realize $6.5 billion to $8.0 billion in cash tax savings between this year and 2027 due to new policies enacted by President Trump's recent tax and spending bill. It plans to invest $3.5 billion of that savings into building out its fiber internet footprint. The company said it now expects more than 60 million locations by 2030, compared with its prior forecast of about 60 million locations. That figure includes additions from its planned acquisition of substantially all of Lumen Technologies' consumer fiber business. AT&T also plans to put $1.5 billion of the tax savings into its pension fund by the end of 2026. AT&T raised its free cash flow guidance and now expects cash flow in the low to mid $16 billion range for 2025, compared with the prior forecast of $16 billion plus. It also increased each of the following years by $1 billion to $18 billion plus and $19 billion plus for 2026 and 2027, respectively. Write to Patience Hagen at patience.hagen@wsj.com. A steel boom brought thousands of jobs, but no one wants to live there. Mississippi County, Arkansas, is bringing in thousands of workers, and it needs them to put down roots. By Chow Deng. Mississippi County, Arkansas. In recent years, this vast county in the Mississippi Delta has transformed itself into one of the largest U.S. hubs for steel production and reliable, well-paying steel work. Lately, it has shifted to an even harder task, getting those workers to move there. Fueled by billions of dollars in investments from U.S. Steel and other manufacturers, Mississippi County is on track to produce 12 million tons of steel each year, putting it second in production capacity just behind Northwest Indiana, according to the American Iron and Steel Institute. Since 2022, about 1,500 jobs have been created in steel and related industries, according to county estimates. President Trump's tariffs on foreign steel could stoke demand for even more. But the boom has yet to revive the towns that dot the county's rural landscape or even boost its population. Many steelworkers still see the county as too remote and rural to live in, so they choose to commute long distances every day, often from neighboring states. Others keep homes out of state and live in recreational vehicles near the mills during their days-long shifts. U.S. Steel estimates about 38% of its employees in the county reside there. The county's population of about 40,000 is less than half of what it was at its peak in 1950, when it was known as an agricultural center and a leading producer of cotton and soybeans. Median household income for the county is $53,428, according to 2023 census estimates. One in four people live in poverty. Towns within the county that decades ago boasted safe, thriving neighborhoods for middle-class families show the wear of abandonment and decay. "We used to have churches, but now they're almost all empty," said Cliff Clitwood, the county's economic development officer. "There's been just a collapse of the whole social structure." Now the county is leveraging its steel boom to push a host of initiatives to increase its population and shore up its economic base. The chief program called Work Here, Live Here offers home buyers money towards down payments on a new or existing property as long as they live and work in the county for 4 years. The goal, according to Chitwood, is to create a cluster of vibrant towns throughout the county, similar to an industrial area when factories were centerpieces of flourishing communities. The vision echoes that of Trump, who has pitched his sweeping tariff plan as a way to boost U.S. manufacturing and revive old industrial hubs. Whether the push will succeed is an open question. The housing program is expanding and starting to bring in new residents, according to Chitwood. A Holiday Inn and a few coffee shops and restaurants have opened in Osceola, Arkansas, where U.S. Steel's Big River facilities are located. But relying on manufacturing, and especially steel, to help a place grow is much more difficult than it was more than a half century ago, says Mervyn Jebaraj, an economist at the University of Arkansas. Automation and technology have sharply reduced the number of steelworkers needed to run a mill. Big industrial companies such as U.S. Steel or General Motors once helped launch hospitals and schools to anchor their communities. Today, manufacturers operate on slimmer margins, giving them less leeway to contribute to the community. Jebaraj said, companies might contribute donations or sponsor local initiatives, but generally shy away from the larger commitments. Arkansas officials began trying to recruit steel companies during the 1980s in hopes of diversifying an economy hit hard by the decline of agriculture. The state offered generous tax abatements and incentives, touting its robust electrical grid and its proximity to highways, rail lines, and the Mississippi River. In 1987, after a pitch from then-Governor Bill Clinton, Nucor Steel arrived and built a mill as part of a joint venture with a Japanese firm. Nucor opened a second mill in the county in 1992. Investment picked up over the past decade. Big River Steel built a $1.3 billion plant in 2014. U.S. Steel, which took over Big River in 2021, launched a $3 billion mill in 2022, the largest private sector project in Arkansas history. In 2023, Hybar said it would build a $700 million mill to make rebar, as well as solar farm to power it. Today, Mississippi County estimates it has between 7,000 and 8,000 steel or steel-related jobs, representing about one quarter of all the jobs in the county. Still, a job surge hasn't translated into broader economic growth or boosted the population. A few years ago, the county's elected officials told Chitwood of the Economic Development Commission that they wanted to see more residents. By 2018, Mississippi County's Development Commission, the Great River Economic Development Foundation, had invested about $25 million in taxpayer money to attract steel-related businesses to the county. The funds had gone towards helping steel companies buy land and equipment and train workers. But county officials were telling Chitwood, "You got to figure out a way to get more of them to live here, or we don't care about the jobs," he said. The county eventually hatched Work Here, Live Here. It worked with the local bank, Farmers Bank and Trust, to develop a financing plan. Newly constructed homes and existing homes would come with forgivable loans of 10% and 5%, respectively. Steel companies and other employers of the county would be asked to contribute money to the program, which would ultimately be lent back to their own employees. So far, a dozen private employers in the county have invested in the Work Here, Live Here initiative, and about 160 families have purchased homes with the help from it. U.S. Steel said it has contributed $3.4 million to the program. Daniel R. Brown, chief operating officer of the company's operations in the county, said 148 of its employees have taken advantage of the program. Chitwood said about 250 new homes have gone up in the county in the past 14 months, with more than half of them bought under the Work Here, Live Here initiative. It doesn't sound like many until you realize it's more than we had in 20 years, he said. Barrett Fiskerly decided to buy a $240,000 house with his wife in Bathville, Arkansas, last August. I kept seeing commercials about it, he said, of the program. Fiskerly and his wife both have jobs a few minutes' drive south of Lexicon, a steel fabricator and construction company. Joe Harris, Jr., the mayor of Osceola, says the city has demolished unclaimed and run-down residential properties and is looking to start a program to give vacant lots to people who promise to build homes they will live in. The city recently hired an education specialist to improve its schools. Michelle Vachon, who moved to Mississippi County in 2016 to work as an environmental manager at U.S. Steel, says improvements have been slow, but that things are picking up. Last year, Vachon opened a beer garden with a friend in a historic building she bought in Osceola's downtown. She bought another building that once housed the Osceola Times, one of the oldest weekly newspapers in Arkansas. She plans to open a bar and restaurant there and a loft on the upper floor that could be rented as office space. David Townsend, a 42-year-old mill operator in High Bar, lives in his RV for four-day shifts, then goes home for the next 4 days he has off. The steel industry's work schedule has allowed other workers to split their time between places. Townsend says he considered moving his family from their home, a 90-minute drive away in Tennessee, but ultimately decided his three teenage children should finish their education at their current schools. When the children are older, and if work is great, moving isn't out of the question, he said. Write to chow.deng@wsj.com. Trump expects a $20 million more in ad dollars from 60 Minutes settlement. President posts on social media that he will receive more than the already agreed to $16 million payment by Joe Flint. President Trump said that he anticipates receiving advertising and public services ad commitments worth $20 million from Skydance Media, the company in the process of merging with CBS, Paramount Global. He said the additional compensation would come on top of the $16 million the current owner agreed to pay earlier this month to settle Trump's lawsuit alleging election interference by the network's news magazine 60 Minutes. In a Tuesday social media post, Trump said, "We also anticipate receiving $20 million more from the new owners in advertising, PSAs, or similar programming for a total of over $36 million. This is another in a long line of victories over the fake news media, who are holding to account for their widespread fraud and deceit," he said. CBS has previously said its settlement of the 60 Minutes suit doesn't include any additional compensation, such as public service announcements. A Skydance spokeswoman declined to comment. Trump sued 60 Minutes and CBS News last October, accusing the network of deceitfully editing an interview with Democratic presidential candidate Kamala Harris to make her sound better. CBS denied any wrongdoing or doctoring of her comments. The editing became an issue after CBS aired one version of Harris answering a question about Israel on its Sunday morning show, Face the Nation, and then aired what it called a more succinct version of her answer on 60 Minutes. The two sides spent months in negotiation while simultaneously gearing up for a legal fight. At the same time, Paramount was seeking approval from the Federal Communications Commission for the Skydance deal, which further complicated matters. Earlier this week, Senators Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, and Bernie Sanders sent a letter to Skydance Chief Executive David Ellison seeking information about a potential side deal with Trump for public service announcements and other forms of compensation separate from the CBS settlement. Is there currently any arrangement under which you or Skydance will provide compensation, advertising, or promotional activities that in any way assist President Trump, his family, his presidential library, or other administration officials? The letter asked. Skydance is still waiting the green light from FCC for its deal to acquire Paramount Global. Now that the settlement has been reached, Paramount and Skydance are anticipating FCC approval before the end of summer, people familiar with their thinking have said. Last week, Ellison met with the FCC chairman, Brendan Carr, and other senior officials to the regulatory agency as part of the approval process. In a regulatory filing with the agency that detailed the meeting, Skydance said it discussed its commitment to unbiased journalism and its embrace of diverse viewpoints, principles that will ensure CBS's editorial decision-making reflects the varied ideological perspectives of American viewers. Write to Joe Flint at joe.flint@wsj.com. This is your volunteer broadcaster, Joanne Lowney. If you miss any part of this program, you can get it on demand on our website, sunsounds.org, and click on our broadcast info and audio. You can take SunSounds with you. Get our stream and on demand on our new SunSounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. And you can hear SunSounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Now back to the next article. Hershey lifts candy prices, citing high cocoa costs. Chocolate maker notifies retail customers of double-digit percentage increase. Cocoa markets stay high on supply concerns. By Owen Tucker Smith and Jesse Newman. Inflation isn't finished with your chocolate bar. Hershey is raising prices on its candy, a company official said, in response to continued high cocoa costs. After soaring to above $12,000 on a metric ton in December, cocoa prices have fallen this year, with New York-traded markets hovering around $8,100 this week. But they remain far above historical levels, with poor weather and plant disease squeezing cocoa supplies in West Africa, where the world gets roughly 70% of its cocoa beans. Analysts don't expect prices to return to traditional levels anytime soon. The continuing cocoa market turmoil has cut into food companies' profits and played into price increases. Chocolate maker Lindt and Sprugli has attempted to pass rising costs to its consumers through higher prices. Mondelez, supplier of Oreo cookies, has also blamed cocoa costs as it announced earlier this year a planned price increase. Hershey last week informed its retail customers of a roughly double-digit percentage increase, the company official said Tuesday. Increases will come through higher price tags and other means and will vary from customer to customer, generally falling between the low teens and 20%. For consumers, three-quarters of Hershey's confection portfolio should continue to cost $4 or less. The Pennsylvania-based company has previously said it would raise prices to compensate for escalating cocoa costs, including last August. At the time, Chief Executive Michelle Buck said, "We've absorbed a lot of inflation already, but we do believe we need to pass some of it on." Chocolate candy accounts for 67% of Hershey's sales, according to an April analysis by T.D. Cohen, while non-chocolate candy accounts for about 12%. Executives of the company have said demand for Hershey's products has stayed strong. Shares of Hershey's are up more than 7% this year. Hershey has sought shelter from cocoa price headwinds in commodity derivatives markets, helping the company navigate volatility by entering contracts to purchase cocoa at certain prices in the future, which can pay off if prices climb. Write to Owen Tucker Smith at owen.tucker jesse.smith@wsj.com and jesse.newman@jesse.newman, that's N-E-W-M-A-N, at wsj.com. Toy makers' holiday outlook under pressure from tariffs, layoffs. The toy industry continues to face a challenging environment that is threatening profitability and increasing risk, experts say, by Connor Hart. The outlook for the rest of the year isn't rosy for toy makers. Ahead of second quarter earnings, analysts and experts say the industry continues to face a challenging environment marked by accelerating layoffs, steep tariffs, and cautious retailers, all of which are threatening profitability and increasing risk. Roughly 60% of toy makers have executed layoffs in the last 2 months, according to Greg Herron, chief executive of the Toy Association, an industry trade group. You can see the severity hitting the industry, he said. The cuts span from giants such as Hasbro, which last month laid off 3% of its global workforce in a cost-cutting push, to smaller companies like Loveberry, the company which sells subscription-based play kits and learning programs, enacted a 20% staff reduction in May, just months after posting its first quarterly profit. Hasbro will lay off 3% of employees. Medium-sized companies will lay off 20%, and small entrepreneurs are indicating that they're at risk of going out of business, Harry Hearn said. Steep tariffs on goods from China, as well as Southeast Asian manufacturing hubs such as Malaysia, Indonesia, and Vietnam, have eaten into margins and led some companies to cancel holiday season orders altogether, he added. These tariffs aren't numbers over our industry can work under, Ahern said. The inflation rate for toys, games, and play equipment rose 2.2% between April and May, marking the sharpest monthly increase the industry has seen in 4 years, according to data from Toy Association. Toy makers rushed to bring an inventory ahead of the latest round of tariff increases, but goods arriving later this summer will reflect higher costs and pose fresh challenges for pricing and profitability, Ahern said. Retailers are responding to the uncertain environment with caution, delaying purchasing decisions, avoiding riskier new product launches, and focusing their shelves on proven legacy brands rather than experimenting with novel offerings. They're in a wait-and-see pattern, and that's incredibly paralyzing for our industry, Ahern said. This dual squeeze of rising costs and cautious demand is creating a stark divide with the toy sector, analysts say. Larger players like Hasbro and Mattel benefit from diversified supply chains, greater pricing power, and stronger balance sheets, positioning them to weather the turbulence better than most. These companies have the scale and brand loyalty to navigate tariff pressure and retailer conservatism, analysts at UBS said. But smaller players are facing existential risks as costs rise and orders shrink. The Toy Association is actively lobbying the Trump administration for tariff relief, emphasizing the high stakes ahead of the critical holiday selling season. Ahern noted that conversations with policymakers have been productive, though he warned that time is running out for the meaningful changes to be enacted before peak shipping begins. Hasbro and Mattel are scheduled to report second quarter results Wednesday, with Wall Street expecting both to log lower profit and sales from last year's comparable quarter. Both companies declined to comment. Write to Connor Hart at connor.hart@wsj.com. The global economy is powering through a historic increase in tariffs. Trade, production, growth, and other global economic vitals are proving resilient almost 4 months after President Trump's Liberation Day tariffs, by Tom Fairless. The global economy is sailing through this year's historic increase in tariffs, displaying an unexpected trait, resilience. Faced with extreme uncertainty, businesses and households have surprised economists with their ability to hedge, finding a short-term path through as they await clarity on where tariffs will end up. Global producers brought forward purchases and rerouted goods destined for the U.S. through third-party countries that are subject to lower tariffs. For the most part, households and businesses have continued to spend and invest despite the uncertainty, analysts say. The world economy grew at a 2.4% annual rate in the first half of this year, around its longer-term trend, according to J.P. Morgan. Trade volumes are buoyant. Stock prices on both sides of the Atlantic have rebounded to record highs, and growth forecasts from Europe to Asia are being raised. Investment, manufacturing, employment, spending, and overall activity all held up globally, according to Goldman Sachs. What people have gotten wrong is the chaotic behavior of trade policy and the hedging that it has introduced, said Marcus Noland, Executive Vice President of the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, D.C. In part, businesses are benefiting from reflexes learned and changes made during the COVID-19 pandemic, such as bulletproofing their supply chains, which compressed margins at the time, but is now paying off. Governments from the U.S. to Germany are also spending lavishly, helping to support confidence. Some businesses may be building up inventory now in the expectation that tariffs will be higher in the future, said Angel Talavera, an economist at Oxford Economics. It seems that the uncertainty is weighing less on economic activity than we thought, Isabel Schnabel, who sits on the European Central Bank's six-member executive board, said in an interview published in recent days on the central bank's website. The political backlash against globalization that accelerated roughly 10 years ago has also long persuaded many international businesses to rely more on local production to serve their main export markets. Many say the tariffs have underlined the importance of such plans. EBM Pabst, a German manufacturer of fans with around 2.5 billion euros in annual revenue, equivalent to around $2.9 billion, is planning to build a third factory in the U.S. and is considering whether that factory should have an extension, said Chief Executive Officer Klaus Gieseldorfer. The company expects double-digit revenue growth in the U.S. for years to come, partly due to the construction of data centers supporting the artificial intelligence boom. Some American customers have asked the company to localize more production in the U.S. to replace suppliers from Asia who are facing higher U.S. tariffs. Gieseldorfer said that would help us grow 20 to 30% on top in the U.S. World merchandise trade volumes beat expectations in the first 3 months of this year, rising by 5.3% from the year earlier, powered by a surge in imports in North America, the World Trade Organization said in recent reports. The WTO increased its forecast for trade in goods this year to 0.1% growth, having previously forecast a 0.2% decline. In Europe, the manufacturing industry has continued to improve in recent months, with forward-looking indicators for new orders, new export orders, and future output all rising to three-year highs. This suggests that we're seeing more than just front-loading, said the ECB's Schnabel. Production in the continent's critical auto sector seems to be holding up well, even though it is subject to a 25% tariff, and exports to the U.S. have softened, said Adrian Pretajon, an economist at Capital Economics. We expect that the previous stockpiling of goods and the impact of tariffs will weigh on Eurozone exports, but it's not clear that there will be as dramatic a fall as we may have expected, Pretajon said. Even in China, President Trump's chief antagonist on trade, the tariff tumult of the past few months hasn't been as damaging as feared. Chinese exports to the U.S. were about 10% lower in the first 5 months of the year than the same period a year earlier, as tariffs bit into the direct trade between the two economic superpowers. But over the same period, overall exports grew 6%, Chinese customs data show, helped by rising shipments to Asia, Europe, and Africa. Chinese exports in countries including Vietnam, Thailand, and Mexico have been especially strong. Economists say that likely reflects some degree of rerouting of Chinese exports through those countries and on to the U.S. In the first 4 months of 2025, U.S. imports from Southeast Asia were up 28% a year over year, Census Bureau figures show. U.S. imports from Asia overall increased by 10% in the first 5 months of the year from a year earlier to $582 billion despite declining trade with China. In the U.S. itself, households' net worth remains high by historic standards as a share of disposable income, potentially allowing consumers to continue spending despite higher prices. Susan Collins, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston, said in a speech on Tuesday. This resilience has allowed some exporters to the U.S. to pass part of the cost of tariffs onto their customers. Retailers of Parmigiano Reggiano, the Parmesan cheese produced in a designated area of northern Italy, increased prices to the U.S. to around $43 to $45 per kilogram from $42 this year, partly offsetting an additional 10% tariff applied since April. Sales have continued to surge in the U.S., rising by 9% in the first 4 months of this year, in line with previous months. Tariffs may eventually reduce the number of people that are able to afford the cheese, but we haven't seen that yet, said Niccolo Bartinelli, president of the Parmigiano-Reggiano Consortium. Cheese importers have managed to offset part of the impact by importing more inventory before the tariffs kicked in. The cheese producers recently stepped up their sales efforts in the U.S., sponsoring this year's Miami Open tennis tournament and unveiling partnership with the New York Jets football team. U.S. imports from Europe surged 37% in the first 5 months of the year from a year earlier to $421 billion, with moderate growth continuing in April and May, according to Census Bureau data. Elevated profit margins in the U.S. business suggest that they are able to bear some of the increased costs from tariffs, the Boston Fed's Collins said. As a result, the adverse impact of tariffs on labor market conditions and economic growth may be more limited, she said. To be sure, some of the strength in trade could unwind as firms slow their purchases in the coming months as payback for earlier hefty orders to beat the U.S. tariffs, economists say. The global economic shrug also seems to have emboldened the Trump administration to press for even higher tariffs, and some economists say it is possible the shock will come with a delay. Probably people did expect more immediate effects, said the Peterson Institute's Noland. Brexit, which didn't cause the British economy to seize up when it happened but had a negative cumulative effect over time, could be a good analogy, Noland said. The level of tariffs also matters. A 10% uniform levy on all U.S. imports might have a negligible economic effect, whereas rates of 30% or 50% could be much more problematic, Noland said. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen warned recently that such levels could cause trade between the European Union and the U.S. to freeze. Write to Tom Fairless at tom.fairless@wsj.com. Here's an opinion article by the editorial board. The lunacy of lawfare against the Fed. Criminalizing a spat over interest rates is an Argentina-level mistake. Agitators within the Trump administration for weeks have flogged a Federal Reserve office renovation as a pretext to harass Chairman Jerome Powell. Now comes the lawfare with a criminal perjury referral against Mr. Powell to the Department of Justice from a member of Congress. How low can this crowd go? The complaint in MAGA quarters is that the multi-year renovation of several office buildings in the federal Washington, D.C. campus is running way over budget. The cost is said to total some $2.5 billion now, from a $1.9 billion estimate when the refurbishment started. It's a dubious project with a zoning application that envisioned a new underground parking garage and concourse connecting the two buildings, Atria and Water Features, a jazzed-up executive dining facility, and luxury finishes. It's also not the first government building project to run over budget. And if you think this cost overrun matters to the federal budget, you missed a few decimal points and commas in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. No, this kerfluffle is pure pretext. President Trump has been annoyed by Mr. Powell since the Fed chief proved less pliable than expected after Mr. Trump appointed him in the first term. Mr. Trump now wants Mr. Powell to cut interest rates to help the economy, despite stubbornly elevated inflation. The president also is annoyed that the Fed chief keeps warning that monetary officials must monitor the economic consequences of Mr. Trump's beloved tariffs to make sure they don't become inflationary. Cooler heads have prevailed on Mr. Trump, at least for now, not to fire Mr. Powell in a dispute overtly about monetary policy. Mr. Powell would sue if Mr. Trump tried, and he might well win since the Supreme Court has signaled that it's disinclined to extend presidential power that far. But the financial market disruption, while such a case wends its way through the courts, could be considerable. This is the reason, the only reason, Mr. Trump and his acolytes are interested in their Fed office building. Some of them think Mr. Powell's putative mismanagement of the building project could provide grounds to fire Mr. Powell for cause. And where this political game playing leads, these days the lawfare won't be far behind. So with dreary inevitability, Representative Anna Paulina Luna, a Trump-aligned Republican from Florida, this week referred Mr. Powell to the Justice Department on an accusation he lied under oath to Congress last month about the building project. He told senators some of the more controversial parts of the renovation plan, such as a VIP dining room or rooftop beehives, aren't being built, although they are included in the zoning application. Ms. Luna is parroting Bill Pulte, Mr. Trump's director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency, who weeks ago called for an investigation of Mr. Powell over this testimony. The congresswoman is trying to criminalize what at its core is an argument over monetary policy. Mr. Powell's term as chair ends next May, and it's certain he won't be reappointed. Whatever Mr. Powell's rhetorical exactitude, it's madness to create a new precedent for prosecuting officials for policy disagreements. Doing so is the road to the hyper-politicized monetary policy you'd expect in Argentina. Now that Congress is interested in the Fed, lawmakers have plenty of better ways to spend their time. They could debate the dual mandate, price stability plus full employment, they handed the Fed in the 1970s, or the appropriateness of the Fed's ample reserves regime, its delivery of forward guidance, or its practice of paying interest on banks' reserve balances, and whether Congress could or should act to curtail any of this. If Ms. Luna has anything useful to say about any of these issues, she's welcome to contact us at wsj.com. That's the kind of democratic oversight the Fed needs, and perhaps it's what Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent had in mind Monday when he called for a review of the Fed. But it's also hard work, which is why lawmakers haven't done it. Waging lawfare against Fed Chief Mr. Trump dislikes is much more fun, at least until a future Democratic Congress or administration attempts the same thing against conservative officials. Democrats attack gig worker benefits. Bernie Sanders doesn't want non-union workers to get health insurance, by the editorial board. Senate Democrats are breathless about Americans losing government health care, but they're dead set against expanding private coverage. They're attacking a plan to help gig workers get benefits merely because unions won't get a cut. Louisiana GOP Senator Bill Cassidy released several bills last week that would shield companies from regulatory onslaught if they decide to offer health or retirement plans to their contract workers. Delivery drivers for Uber, Amazon, and other gig platforms would be able to get these benefits without the risk that courts or federal agencies would reclassify them as full employees. The bills would bridge the gap between workers' desire for benefits and their increasing preference for flexible work. As of 2023, the Bureau of Labor Statistics categorized more than 10% of the U.S. labor force as contingent workers, a category that includes contractors and on-call employees. Surveys show that 75% to 85% of these workers prefer not to be full employees, but progressive regulators have sought to strip independent status from workers who receive any benefits. In a committee hearing on the bill last week, Senator Bernie Sanders sidestepped the issue of workers' benefits to address his party's real concern, giving unions more power over individual workers. These bills are about giving corporations the freedom to deny workers the right to form a union, he said. Independent contractors can't unionize under the National Labor Relations Act, so unions and the Democrats they support want to outlaw contract work, or at least deprive it of benefits that could attract workers. Democrats on the committees were united in opposition. This political opposition has deterred several gig companies from offering benefits. Under Uber, CEO Dara Khosrowshahi has pledged more than $650 million a year to fund health insurance and paid time off if lawmakers would withdraw the threat to reclassifying the company's drivers. It's a shame workers will have to wait. If not for the opposition of lawmakers who claim to value health care, millions of workers could receive benefits without trading their freedom to get them. That brings us to the end of today's edition of the Wall Street Journal. I'm Joanne Lowney, your volunteer broadcaster on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Stay tuned for more interesting programs on Sun Sounds.